Broadway Talk Radio, the official podcast of the Mandalorian Mercs. We're a costume organization dedicated to charity efforts around the globe, attending events in Mandalorian armor we've built by hand. Here on the show, we'll keep you up to date with the latest fan community news. Visit our website at www.mandalorianmercs.com.
Hello and welcome to Keldabi Talk Radio. I am your host, Crow. And with me on this episode is Pinocchio.
Hello.
Thaxos.
Hey, hey.
Misha Kitty.
Hey, everyone.
Frost.
Yellow.
Joining us again as one of our two special guests this episode, we have Vraiden Zur.
Hello. Thank you for having me again.
Also joining us this month is Fenrul.
Hi.
And our second special guest joining us for the first time on KTR, we have Dubral.
Good to be here.
So main thing we have this month, we have a bunch of questions about CRLs and app team questions, which is why we have Dubral and Vraiden here. But before we go into that a little bit, because it's DeBrawl's first time on, just going to have a couple questions for you as far as let the listeners know who you are, what you do. You do a lot.
Some would say so, yes.
So what currently, what are the roles that you have in the Mercs?
Right now, I am the Brigade's XO and an App Team XO, and under those, I don't know how many separate teams are inside of those duties, but there are quite a few in there.
And so in general, as part of those roles, what are your usual duties and what's your quote unquote day-to-day operation on that?
As far as App Team XO, I'll be monitoring the regional Rusol chats. Every region within the Mercs, I have between three or four Rusol assigned. Making sure that the information, new training gets out, decisions on CRLs that might come up. Also, we have our, within the app team, we have app team leads, and the app team leads will take charge of their own teams, the voting teams on apps. So I'll be grading apps, directing my team that and that side. And then when we're not in the apps and fielding all those, we'll be monitoring the clan Rusolores and getting them all up to speed, because they can come in and out and go, and it's kind of a revolving door in some regions.
Last question I have, a question we ask pretty much everybody that comes on the show: how did you end up hearing about the Mercs, and how did you get involved in this crazy little club of ours?
A few years back, I had a vending booth at one of my state's cons, and I pretty much had the kit that I ended up apping in was Return of the Jedi Fett. Just had it kind of floating around my shop, and I was talking to a couple of the 501st members and was thinking about going into the 501st, and why not, got the Fett. And then I met Andrew Mackey, who was the Allarad of the Michigan clan here, and just a wonderful guy, absolutely wonderful guy. And it was then, after meeting him and just the feeling that came about being around that booth and talking with him, that pretty much sealed my my fate of becoming a Merc.
Cool.
My turn. Nice.
It is your turn.
My turn. Except now I've lost all the questions. Okay. So, Matt, I'd love to ask you a couple questions about some of the CRLs and the BRLs. Are you down?
Oh, for sure.
Awesome. So one of the questions we received is about the new pilot CRL. And can you tell me a little bit about how that breaks down?
The pilot CRL was interesting to write, because we had to take it. It came about right about the time of the Protector of Concord Dawn episode from Rebels, and it forced our hand with it, because we had been considering making a pilot CRL for a while, but any time that you have to make a sub CRL for a costume, it gets tricky because you have to stay within the base CRLs, and you don't want to make too many exceptions because you don't want to confuse people. But obviously, you're not going to have a pilot in heavy armor. You're not going to have, at the same time, you're not ever going to see a heavily armored Mando with an ejection harness. So we had to decide what we were going to do, what would work. And because the pilot CRLs, the canon CRLs for which would be the Mandalorian protectors from Rebels, and the customs, we had to make and kind of decide which, what we were going to leave out of the CRLs, what we were going to include and make mandatory, because in our custom pilots, there are less armor pieces, and we don't want to make it so simple that anyone that doesn't want to wear a cot or a backplate or, these things that just kind of make it too easy and make the kit bland. So we had to decide what the additions we were going to have for the pilot CRLs while taking away from what would normally be a standard light kit. The helmet, for instance, on the pilot, we made it mandatory that you have to have a blast shield or what we're calling a pilot brow or like a Mohawk ridge down the center. Another thing that that the Rebels episode did was they took the chest diamond off the protectors or they took it off their chest, and it's embedded in the helmet, or it's on the helmet. So we made the armored diamond optional, obviously highly recommended. We want to see diamonds to include it somewhere on the kit. The life support boxes we made mandatory for the pilot CRLs, and obviously we're not going to have a pilot with a backplate. While it does make sense to have one, it's not going to be required. What wouldn't work would be a pilot with a cape. So, but how do you get away? Because the way the CRL is written with a cape, the cape doesn't take the place of a backplate. The cape covers the area that the backplate would normally be. And I think that's something that a lot of people miss, is that they misinterpret the reasoning for a cape. A cape is there to imply that there is a backplate underneath it. But obviously with a pilot, we're not going to have a cape. So what do we do? We don't want to require a backplate. So what we did was we came up with a wraparound collar. Basically a piece that wraps around the back that would cover the shoulder blades, maybe like an upper third or an upper quarter of a back would be like the wraparound collar, and that would take the place of a backplate for a pilot. It's also a place you could mount the life support box on. We required pouch style pockets on the thighs for the pilot flight suit. With the ejection harness and a single belt instead of a standard two-waist item. We took away the option of fingerless gloves. We figured pilots are going to have, fully covered extremities. And then the weapon requirements, no one's going to be taking a cannon into the cockpit with them. So we just simplified it with a sidearm. Just make it still have your standard weapon in the sidearm and something that you can keep holstered and easy enough to bring along with with you where you're going. As far as how they work out with the protectors and the canon CRLs for the pilot CRLs, I want to say without looking at them real quick, but I know that there were color restrictions on the canon. And I think we had two different variations that we saw, two or three, for pilots A and B that we decided existed in the episode. And those are obviously, being canon, more restrictive than our custom CRLs.
Right. Yeah, because general, like we always hold that the canon CRL, if you're going for that, that'll trump any of the other less specific CRLs.
Well, Canon, thank you. With Canon CRLs, sorry, with Canon CRLs, they're if you have a Canon reference, exceptions can be made when the CRL is written. You know, we use Sabine's armor, for instance. Mm-hmm. You know, prior to the Clan Ren stuff, there was you know, a lot of people wanted to use the Sabine armor as for a custom, and we couldn't do it.
Right.
Because it violated the base CRLs.
That was really thorough. And I'm actually sitting here with a couple people eating dinner while podcasting and relaying the whole idea of pilot not having cape, and everyone is nodding their head furiously and in agreement and saying what great sense that makes. And I think it just points out how when these CRLs are put together, it's not just like we have a dartboard and we're throwing darts and saying, hey, no cape, that sounds good, and no big weapons. I mean, they're really planned out very well.
If I may interject here, it kind of reminds me of the Incredibles. No capes.
No capes.
Mm-hmm. No capes.
Right.
Well, it just goes back to character design. I mean, pilots have a function, and they have to fit in that function. So just go for what makes sense.
All right. Well, so let's talk a little bit about brigades. Can you tell us, either Matt or David, want to chime in and let us know if there's any new brigade stuff on the horizon, any new specialties, new additions, or any new changes?
Okay. Well, we've got some stuff coming up. Some of the things that we had coming out of last year were some behind-the-scenes changes. When I took over as Brigadier, I asked the Council and the Regional Conclave to look at restructuring the Codex and the bylaws with the way the brigades are structured. A lot of that does not impact the day-to-day operations of the brigades. But what we're going to do is I want to emphasize profession creation instead of creating new brigades, that if someone or if a group of members want to get together and build a specialty, we can get together and write a profession requirements list. And then if we get enough professions, we might form new brigades and so on. So that's just some of the structural changes that we've got coming up. We're in the midst of our 2-year reviews. So if you're a brigade member, your brigade marshal should be contacting you or should have already contacted you about the 2-year reviews. Some other stuff we've got coming up. We got some ideas for brigades merchandise, because I know everybody likes swag, right? Who doesn't?
Oh, yeah.
So that's hopefully we're going to get that going sometime this summer or soon. We're working with the quartermaster and the supply team to get that launched. Let's see. New specialties. We don't have any right now. I've been on the forums and I've seen that there are a lot of people who want to write a new profession or want to have a new brigade proposal. And if you can come up with something that makes sense within the scope of the brigades. And, you know, the brigades are task-specific armor specialization. And so we have, you know, we have the demolition specialist, and we have the urban assault, and we have the desert operations, and so on. And what we want to see with profession requirement list proposals is something that's general, that's specific enough for a task that's not already covered, but it's also general enough that a bunch of people could build it. I want to write something so specific that it's only going to apply for me, and then I want my own brigade sigil for it, because we're not going to put those through. If you would like to make your own armor, if you or the member would like to make their own armor that specific, that's fine, and I'd love to see it. And if people want to come up with their own custom sigils, that's great. But as far as brigades and professions, what we're looking for is something that is broad enough to appeal to a wide variety of people. So, for instance, we have the medic brigade, we have assassins, we have snipers. Again, task-specific things that are specific to a certain job, but also general enough that other folks can take that and run with it and build their own kits around it.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, you guys are, I mean, I've been on the brigade team in this sort of weird nebulous form of PR person slash cheerleader for a couple years now. And I've always been really impressed with how open the marshals and the brigadier are to new professions, provided they do make sense. Because I helped do the acquisition ops and get that through. And that was created because the person who really kind of came up with it wanted something that wasn't killing people and carrying weapons and that sort of thing. So I think it's really fantastic that you all are so open to different options.
Well, thank you. The charm of this club over some of the other clubs is that it does allow for the level of personalization and customization that you just don't see. Again, I'm not knocking any of the other clubs because I'm a member of several of them. But, you know, I like building a Mando that is different from everyone else. But I also like that I can look at someone and what I tell people is your armor tells your story. And so when I see a Beastmaster that's been built, or when I see a sniper or something, instantly I know what their function is and what they do. And you can put 10 people together with the same basic kit, and they all look different. And that's what I love about our club. And I love to hear what people want to build. Now, like I said, some things I don't think are appropriate for the brigades, or they fit into an existing one. And if that's how it goes, that's how it goes. But like I said, I do love to hear about and see what people make that's different from everyone else. I mean, I don't know if you've had a chance to watch the video of us at Celebration doing the march. I mean, there are, 300 people in that video, and everybody that walks by looks different. And I just love that about our club.
It is what makes us special.
Yep.
And echoing what David was saying, it's interesting because – And I totally agree with what he's saying, that you can look at everybody and see the individual in all the kits. But getting into the new professions, and those who would create new professions, it's extremely difficult to do it well. And as much as we love to field the ideas of creating some of these, and there are a lot of good concepts out there. I think of one specifically that's been on the back burner for a while. That's it's a Pathfinder. The proposed BRLs for it are, they make perfect sense. But the problem with one of the problems is with all and with all brigade creation is that it has to separate and it has to stand out from the other professions. And the problem that I remember with Pathfinder was that it, I think basically if you add a shovel, you become you add a shovel to a recon kit and you basically become a Pathfinder. And so, you know, that's kind of one of those reasons why, you know, that one's still on the back burner and needs attention. But the new brigade creation, new profession, I really do enjoy fielding those as they come in, it's really good to see when a bunch of people get together and decide that they're going to do it. Now the privateer has been a huge success. I think I've seen more privateer apps come in than any three others combined since its creation. And when that was just one of those things where the brigade members buckled down and they ironed out all the things that they would need to, they made it different. They made it stand out. And then, I mean, the builds are still coming in. They flood in.
Well, who doesn't want to be a pirate? I mean, especially a space pirate.
I have my own reasons. Space pirates.
Yeah. Well, he's exactly right. So, I mean, we've had six privateers come through since November.
Mm-hmm. And there were plenty before that too. I mean, that's one of those builds that gets excited. I know of two or three that are building right now.
Yep, good.
Okay, so what can we expect from Canon CRL and BRLs that are being added in? So are we going to see CRLs for Clan Ren and their integration into custom kits? So that's that age-old question, right? Can we all make custom Sabine-type armor?
I asked Ulrich that this afternoon. And he said, we're working on it, but there are no new news right now. Matt, yeah, so if you have something different, let me know.
I've got the CRL board up, and it's and Quinn has posted on it. And it says, this comes up as often as lightsaber, blah, blah, blah. The answer is yes, we are going to allow the Clan Ren armor with modifications. The helmet can be used as is. In order for the armor to be used, full segmented collar plate must be added. An ab plate must be added. Back plate or a cape must be worn. Extra armor plates. The trap plates that Sabine has must be worn. Basically, we're taking that armor and we're discussing taking that armor, and we are making it fit our CRLs, our base CRLs.
So essentially, when a member applies, they would be having armor that is in the styling of one of those costumes, not necessarily
very much in the style of.
It wouldn't be a direct copy, but with a different paint job then.
Yes, and as far as customs, that's correct. When Canon comes around and the Canon CRLs come around, obviously it's going to have to be screen accurate, or however accurate you want it to be. Let's see,
animation accurate,
animation accurate, yeah, drawn accurately, built accurately to drawing. let's see.
Though I guess it is technically a screen. It's a screen accurate, probably.
Right. Screen accurate, yeah.
Yeah, if it's still coming off your phone, it's still a screen.
Right.
Awesome.
Well, like I said, when I asked Ulrich this today, he said right now it's we're working on it, but have no new news.
Right. It's what we've decided so far, and it's one of those things that just because we've decided on it doesn't mean that we won't have to go back and change it. And so if somebody hears this, they start building, and then we go and decide we have to make a change for accuracy or for whatever. Basically, you get a lot of butthurt from that, and the backlash and the blowback from making a change when someone heard that they could do it. I don't want to ever have to do that again. Retro and build.
So, it's controversial question time. Are you ready, Matt?
I'm ready as I'll ever be.
All right. So here is the million-dollar question that all of our 7 Kel Dabi Talk Radio podcast listeners will want to know out there in podcast land. Will the Kenobi version of the Maul Super Commando be created as a CRL for not one, not two, but triple membership with the 501st and the Rebel Legion and the Mercs? And if so, how will it break down? And the most important question that probably every single person wants to know, lightsaber or no? Go.
It's already been done, and it's already been built within the club.
That's true.
It's been approved within the club.
Really? How has it?
The Death Watch Grunt, the Kenobi version of the Death Watch Grunt, I think there are two that have done it. We do allow it. What we also make it very clear is that, for instance, in the Rebel Legion, if the temptation to groom your beard and your hair to look like Kenobi and walk around without a helmet is there. Within Mercs, we require that, you troop with your helmet. Mm-hmm. And no lightsabers. You cannot carry a lightsaber.
Okay,
so
that
you
was.
You have your super commando, your armor, and your helmet, just like any other super commando grunt. It's just painted with the Kenobi style setup. So yes, it is allowed.
Okay, so that was logistics that I was talking about with someone the other day, and that's actually what inspired me to want to really reach out and kind of talk to you about this as well. And other people have asked me about it before. It's because, there's a whole logistics thing with, like, can you carry the lightsaber? Do you not have to carry the lightsaber? But what you're pretty much saying is, as long as you're falling within the Mercs bylaws and you can still have the other stuff in the other clubs, but within the Mercs bylaws, you have to wear the helmet, no lightsaber.
Absolutely. And it's completely, you know, I mean, the idea that some people want to do the triple membership and kind of just do it all in one, that's what's alluring about that kit, is that you only have to build one if you want to become a member of all three groups. But as far as getting a merc credit for a troop, I mean, we fight constantly with and debate unofficial members, official members that want to carry lightsabers, and Mandalorians just don't carry lightsabers. They just custom Mandalorians don't carry lightsabers. You want to carry a lightsaber? You want to carry a glow stick? You know, there are canon characters to do so that you got to build. You know, Sabine comes to mind now with the new one with the darksaber. And the same thing with previously. You want to carry a darksaber? Those are your builds. But as far as customs, even with that Kenobi, we don't want to see it. And it's just one of those things where you just got to draw a hard line and make the ruling, because it's, as we've decided, it's what's in the best interest of the club.
And yeah, where this will inevitably get sticky, because it would be one person doing this for three different clubs, would be for events where there is representation from multiple clubs, and you probably will sort of have to pick who you're going to represent that day.
That's one of the things I was concerned about, was, you know, when it was brought up within my group here in TX, it was like, well, this is coming from the guy who just always wants to make a costume, like a new costume every day. And it's like, well, you understand that if you make it for the triple membership, you have to represent one of the groups, and you really have to make that hard decision.
Yeah, and I mean, I know that the 501st Garrison where I am, there was one of the times I was wearing my Super Trooper, and they said, you know, like, this is a 501st event, so you can take credit for this troop, and I'm like, okay, like, I guess I will if but you know, I'm here with, you know, as a merc. Granted, the kit is, you know, within, you know, if you're doing a 501st or a Rebel Legion Kenobi, and a merc Kenobi, I mean, I'm sure you could do it. The temptation would be there, obviously, to carry that lightsaber and to troop without your helmet. And, you know, it's one of those things that it has to be policed and enforced at the clan level at the event. You know, and that's where a good trained Rusalor comes in handy.
Well, you know, and the other thing is, lightsabers have historically never been allowed. Period.
Right.
And just trophies. Just straight up never will. So that is the thing that will always exclude the quote unquote Obi-Wan representation with your helmet off and lightsaber out, because those are the two key components that differentiate Obi-Wan's wearage of that armor from, you know, the.
From the guy he stole the armor from. Nameless dude
whose armor it actually was.
Yeah.
And that means that if you are doing a mercs troop, there will never be a situation in which the lightsaber version is the version that you're going to do and get credit.
You know, you mentioned your... go ahead, Mish.
I was just going to say, I love that Eric rolls in here with, like, the downer, like, there will never be a troop when you can actually do that. Thank you for being that voice of reason /
sadness.
You know, sadness / let down.
I've shot down so many people who want lightsabers that I'll take.
Yeah, just the cold, like, bucket of water that everyone needs to hear that they are not going to carry a lightsaber with their kid, period, done.
There's a reason he's called Frost.
Thanks, Uncle Frost.
Well, now, Eric does know the reason I carry a saber trophy and have for several years, and it was just to bug somebody, so...
But, I mean, that's a trophy, not a saber. And also, you can either call him Uncle Frost or Uncle Frosty Frosty Pants, which, you know, either one of those will work.
Uncle Frosty. Oh, that's going to stick.
Well, I'm looking back.
I know. My nicknames usually do.
I'm looking back at this entire thing, and I'm thinking, you know, now when anyone ever asks the question, hey, can I do the triple CRL costume, I'm just going to point to this episode. In fact, hey, NTX, I told you. I told you all. This message is brought to you by Federal.
Don't be that guy.
Man, I'll be that guy.
Well, I'm not trying to be that guy. I'm just
You've already been that guy.
I'm just saying the points that I brought up to them are echoed here. So that makes me feel somewhat validated. But I will go into one thing, and this kind of hurts me because I am 501st. I'm a TIE pilot and a mentor as a TIE pilot. One of the things I'm going to say is with you having the pre-production prototype and them saying, are you trooping as 501st? They don't have a CRL for the prototype yet. I'm looking at
I gave them the CRL. I know I talked to the CEO of the Bounty Hunters Guild frequently, and I gave my GML the 50 or the CRLs that I wrote for the club. And as far as I know, that's how it was cleared, was because of the CRLs that I wrote for the club. And I know that Aaron at the Boba Fett fan club, he wants to publish a CRL so that people have a working list for this stuff. They don't have CRLs for it, but any build like that falls under the same thing that is graded the same way that we do it. You know, there are a lot of canon characters and Legends characters that come through that people want to build that, you know, and I hope that everyone listening understands now how much work goes into a CRL. We can't just throw it at the wall and see what sticks. A lot of work and a lot of discussion goes into all these things. And you have to also have to take into consideration the references. You know, we beat our head every time we revisit writing or revisiting the Cal Scarrata CRL, because we have a blurry picture of a figure, of a little 2-inch figure, and that's the only real canon reference we have for it. The rest is fan art, or an artist's sketch or whatever. And there are variations. There are variations in boot color and glove color, and all these things. So when a canon or a Legends app comes in, we have to look and dig up as many references and source out of the source material that we have, and we have to decide, you know, and all of them clash, and none of them look the same, because, you know, when it was drawn in this comic book in 1994, it was then redrawn in 2007 by someone completely different, and now looks a little bit different. What's right?
Right.
Which is the right version? And so these things all take, you know, a lot of time to decide what we're going to do with it and how we're going to write this to give someone a clear list of how to build this kit. The CRLs, just because there's not a CRL for a canon character or a Legends character doesn't mean the kit can't be built. It just means it hasn't been built yet, and you don't have a list to go from. So when we do have one that comes in, we just pull up the references, we discuss it amongst ourselves, and we decide if it accurately depicts the character, and if it does, then the app is cleared and the member becomes official.
Yeah, okay. I know a lot of the Cal Scarrata apps that we got in years past, it was basically doesn't meet CRLs and does it look like what we understand the character could look like.
Right.
Like there's a lot of leeway for a few of those.
There's a lot of implied stuff. You have to take into consideration the era, the equipment that was being used by other Mandos at the time. You know, the boots are always one of those questions. You're like, you know,
right.
Did he wear, you know, Django style boots, or is it more of a, you know, was it more of like a combat style boot that we would generally use? Because, you know, the reference pictures that we have, you know, aren't that good.
Well, it's just right. Waist up for him, right? Like Cal Scarrata, I think there's like an action figure and then the one piece of art.
Yeah, we had the Ed Harris drawing.
That makes me want to ask this question, and I may honestly edit this out later, but I had a friend, I still have him, he's still in the area, who built a Cal Scarrata, who still intends on eventually submitting it for us, but he ended up being the reason why they added the second optional holster for Cal Scarrata, because he talked about it, and it was some reason saying like the detail wasn't explicitly there, or it wasn't in the art, the details were kind of empty on it. I know that that second optional holster is not a member of our CRL. Would that be eventually one that could probably get put in, or is that just kind of up in the air with what we're talking about?
Any additions to the CRLs are going to be discussed as they you know, poke their evil head up and you know, inaccuracies, any discrepancies between resources and the character references always have to be weighed, and we have to decide, you know, if it was an error by the artist or if it just hasn't been noticed yet. Two things come to mind, two specific events come to mind that happened recently. We're revisiting the JotoCast CRLs and reviewing the source material, the Twin Engines of Destruction book. There is obvious artist error where the panels were just colored wrong, because in the entire book, he's, you know, JotoCast is colored one way, and then these two good shots, close shots, just wrong. And so what do you do with it? You know, you got people who want to build this version with where it's up close and you can see all the detail, but it's inaccurate.
Okay. Maybe what we do is we make a CRL that's just the artist screw up version.
See, now you're just one of those where you just want another CRL. We'll just write another CRL for it. Write this one. We'll just
write a CRL. They said it'll be fine.
This is
it'll be fine. They said.
Nothing bad could ever happen, guys.
I was talking to my friend who's the detachment leader for the FISD and the 501st, and I'm like, well, why don't you guys make a Battlefront specific CRL? What do you mean? Well, you know, in Battlefront, you've got like all the accessories, like the pauldrons. You have different weapons. You can decide what weapons are being used by Imperial. Oh, that's just too much work, or it's like that's not screen accurate. It's like, but guys,
it is on my screen.
it's like appears in multiple medias. It's like, what are you guys gonna do about the magma packs? Well, we already have a magma trooper.
See, you're just trying to cause trouble.
That's trying to cause
trouble. Come on, man.
Battlefront is canon, as far as I understood it.
Yeah, it is.
So, EA games are all canon now, which includes Galaxy of Heroes, by the way, everyone, which means that Darth Nihilus is back.
What, seriously?
Yep.
That's canon?
Yep.
Well, he's canon. His story might not be, but he is.
When are we getting Revan back?
Yep. Yeah. Well, no, we haven't got Revan back, but we do have HK-47.
Yep.
When did we lose Revan? Oh, my God.
The canon nuke.
They're in the Legends canon split.
Sorry, the Revan book was from Legends.
Right before that. Yeah.
Oh, of course.
It's okay because the Revan books were terrible. So
they really were.
Wait, what books?
The Knights of the they weren't even Knights of the Old Republic. They were the Old Republic. Revan.
Hey man, 10% of the EU books are great.
Yeah, I think that's generous.
It's the other 90.
Wait, Galaxy of Heroes was the Cartoon Network West game. What game were we talking about?
Galaxy of Heroes is the current EA
iOS
mobile
game
that I play the crap out of, and it is canon.
For some reason, there's not a Wikipedia article on it. And it's like, when I pull Galaxy of Heroes, it just pulls up the old Cartoon Network game. It's like, what?
Oh, it's there. Well, I too wasted a lot of my time on it.
Yes.
I'm with you guys. I have yet to actually play it because I have no space on my phone. But
the other part of the CRLs, and what is canon, and I want to touch on this too.
It's
the Jango Fett CRL. And we've recently divided the Jango Fett CRL into two different CRLs. Other clubs have not done this. Because there are two definite variations of the Jango Fett character of the armor.
Wait, are we talking about the Kamino Dent?
We're talking about the Kamino Dent, but we're also talking about something else that nobody else has picked up. The Kamino Dent is one thing, where the dent happens on Kamino and is present on Geonosis. But this is something that I found out the other day that is been completely the dent was completely missed by most people. And ruled out, and it's not required in other clubs, whereas we are now requiring it. If you're going to have the JT-12 the stubby pack, the arena pack, then you're going to have the dent on your helmet. And we're going to allot time for the changes because those helmets are difficult to find. But the other part is the Westar 34s. On Geonosis, Django only has one because he loses it on Kamino. He loses his second on Kamino.
Huh.
That's actually 100% true. I did not think about that until just
now. No one notices.
That's a very valid point.
No one notices until now.
That's incredible.
It was one of the questions that when I had the app team, as I had a 7 app team recruits, one of the last times we added members, and it was one of the questions I posed to him, and I posed it to him because I didn't know the answer yet, and I showed a screenshot and I said, find me evidence that Django has 2 Westars on Geonosis, and nobody could do
him shoot one. Yep.
Nobody could do it because
he doesn't have one.
When he kills the what's his name, Coleman,
yeah, Coleman the Trevor, Jedi.
when he first got to go. There's no reason when a Jedi pops up in front of you to pull out one. You pull out both.
Yeah.
Well, and he kills the Reek with one too.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Same deal. Being charged by the equivalent of a space bull. Or a space rhino. Right.
Space bull rhino.
Yeah. Yeah, why would you only pull out one if you've got two? So, yeah, right. No.
That's one of the things on the CRL team. That's one of those things on the CRL team that we decide, you know, if, for instance, when I brought it up to Ref that Django has one blaster on Geonosis, you know, when we write the CRLs, we want to write them as accurately as possible, but we don't want to write them to make, you know, for instance, in the Calscarata CRLs, if we decide that we're going to go one way with, say, brown boots or, you know, whatever, and we have a contradicting CRL from another club, we don't want to make it so that somebody has to choose. And that's one of the times where, you know, for instance, with the single blaster for Django, it was decided that on the CRL level, it's like, well, if this wants to be enforced, that's going to be something that is possibly done at the brigade level.
Well, honestly, like, not putting a blaster into a holster is a pretty easy fix.
He still has
the two holsters, so.
He does have the two holsters. The issue is that a lot of people with entry-level basic OM Djangos have repainted rubies. Mm-hmm. And a repainted blaster does not have the trick trigger on it, the trigger guard.
You're not counting cut scenes where they where it's the behind the scenes stuff where he does have two blasters on Geonosis, are you?
I'm not looking at any of that.
I was gonna say because I do see a couple of those where he does have two blasters, but he's got blue screen in the background.
Right.
So you don't know where he is.
It's actually written on Wikipedia that he loses one.
I just watched Mace Windu versus Django, and he's got one blaster the whole time.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that's
it's almost like the continuity guys in Hollywood are often pretty good. I'm not going to say always, but often.
While we're talking about Django,
right?
If we're talking about Django right now, are we going to talk about the infamous thigh schism?
Hmm? No. Thigh schism?
The theory going around that the thighs were put on backwards.
Oh, maybe they were.
Oh, yes.
They were put on backwards.
So that's not a theory. That's actually real.
Oh, yeah. They were put on backwards.
Yeah. Hmm. See, originally I thought Matt was going to talk about the flexible armor Django
in that scene. Oh, God.
The thighs were put on backwards, and it's something that we make happen during the CRLs. You know, we require people to flip the thighs around during the app process if they decide to wear them wrong, because a lot of people can't tell which leg the thighs go on. The plates are very, very similar.
Wasn't that at one point just decided they could be worn either way? Has that changed?
Yeah, we've required, since I've been on the app team, we've required people to turn them around. It's one of those things that becomes a suggestion, you know, like, hey, by the way, you're approved. Just turn your thighs around from time to time. Well, it's you know, we don't want to require a new picture or require somebody to suit up to switch their thighs around when they're on Velcro. sometimes we have to do it for the new member pictures and whatnot when someone has something like that, which is an easy fix, you know. But, you know, we don't want to make the app process any more difficult than it is. And you know, suiting up and taking pictures is not an easy thing. Is contrary to, you know, we know on the app team how much of a pain it is to get suited up, because if you're doing a Canon, it's got to be right. And you know the kit, but someone dressing you does not.
Right. I mean, the average person.
It's why Boba ended up with upside down knees, or two left knees in Empire in screens, or two left knees or two right knees or whatever it is. The carbon scene has got his knees upside down. It's, I don't want
to. Kind of a mess. I actually, you know, this is so funny. I actually had Maruslor ask Jeremy Bullock about that.
I remember that it was, what's Jeremy's response? I remember that it was green.
Yeah. Well, there it's even more complicated, because on half the Bespin shots of Boba, Jeremy's not actually in the suit.
Yeah. Right.
So,
yeah,
like a fair amount of it was John Morton.
John Morton.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Jeremy was the Jeremy for the most part. Well, wasn't he actually the one who did the? Yeah, he has established that he was the one who was on the landing pad.
Yeah, that was definitely Jeremy.
But he's
no good to me dead scene was John Morton.
Right, and for the most part, what he did on Bespin was him just as the guard.
Yeah, as the Imperial officer.
Yeah, right. The Imperial officer. I am a Ruslor at the time, asked him about that, and he was like very happy to talk to us about it. It was at a convention. I'm just sitting here beside myself on the fact that I had no idea that Jango only had one blaster and had the dentist helmet. Probably because I honestly don't like Attack of the Clones as much.
Nobody likes Attack of the Clones.
No one really likes Attack of the Clones.
It's one of those things that got overlooked, and it's, you know,
I mean, it's surprisingly good, like. Surprisingly good continuity for Star Wars, which is not known for its continuity.
I actually do have a personal question that I have thought about this, and I only see it because I'm looking at the page for Rako Hardeen. I know.
Oh no!
You've probably gotten asked about this in the past, but it's the helmet. Because Rako Hardeen wears the Concept Boba helmet.
It's modified.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, so do we let the prototype helmet come in because it was part of the Boba Fett culture and was designed for him in the past, or do we let it in because it appeared in Clone Wars?
We allow that version 1 Macquarie helmet because of the history behind it and what it became. We allow it in the modern era, but any modifications to that helmet at all from the stock version, and it becomes a late Crusader helmet.
Okay.
But it's you know, as far as I understand it, we've always allowed that helmet because of what it is and where it, you know, what it became. And it is Star Wars lore.
So there's no real indication that, you know, it's like, oh, Rako Hardeen's wearing a Mandalorian helmet. It's just
Rako Hardeen is wearing.
Yeah. He just has it because he has it. He just happened to pick it up somewhere.
Well, and a lot of the work from the animated stuff, or a lot of the art from the animated stuff, is all inspired by a lot of the Macquarie concept stuff. It's all the Imperial Super Commandos look a lot like the V2 Macquarie's armor and the
Super Trooper.
Yeah, I mean it's all kind of there. You see where you know the artists kind of took what they had and evolved it and changed it and made it unique for a character. And, you know, it's good to see stuff like that. And it's, you know, that you're staying true to your base and your roots. You know, when you know that something like that is, you know, canon inspired or legends inspired, basically.
Well, and they've got a, what was it? It's the, hell, I just totally lost it.
That's okay. I found a photo of
the ATPT. The ATPT, the new version of that they've got in Rebels, is the version from the Macquarie concept art as well.
Yeah, and a lot of the design they did for Vader was based off the Macquarie design. And
Scal Vader.
Scal Vader, and they also have the lightsabers are super thin based off it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Wait, well, and I well, love
same
that.
Thing,
I
same thing love with that. Whatever. Oh. What's the one from Rebels that with the alien thing that basically is the Chewbacca of the group?
Oh, Zeb.
Zeb.
He looks surprisingly similar to early Chewbacca Macquarie art.
Yes.
Yeah. He pretty much is. Point. They made him less furry, a little more leathery.
Yeah. His name was I think Jabba the Hutt with one T back then.
Yeah.
Oh. Rich Sean.
Well, that's again one of those things we chalk up to artist error.
What this is, as for people listening, I've just sent Matt a photo and the rest of the chat too of Jango Fett in the Geonosis Arena beside Count Dooku with two blasters. Now it's the CGI'd in Jango right before he jetpacks up.
Oh.
Yeah, because that's
technically he has two blasters in three frames. On Geonosis.
Yeah, that said, he's also this is definitely what gets me about the photo that Sean Daxos put in, is that not only is this the CG Jango, but it looks like the CG off the rubber suit Jango.
Totally.
Like the stunt suit.
He doesn't have the dent either. As a matter of fact, I'm willing to bet this is exactly the same model. And because they were only doing it in three frames
I want to touch on the dent too, because it's interesting. The Jango dent is in the Kamino scene in the right when you first when you get your first glimpse of Jango on that landing platform. You never see a good shot of the helmet where that dent is until later on when he's climbing back up the side after he loses the jetpack. But the argument can be made, and very well the argument can be made, that dent is always there.
Interesting.
Because it's just dark and rainy.
It's rainy, there's reflections, the screen is... CGI image. It's an interesting thing, and it's something that I've spent a lot of time kind of, you know, every single frame trying to definitively find if that dent is always there, because you can make the argument that it's always been there. And it's crazy to think that no one's even picked up that the dent should be there at all until, you know, fairly recently, that, you know, when it's starting to be talked about more and known that Jango does in fact have a dent, and it doesn't happen when the Reek tramples him. It happens on Kamino.
Right.
Or is already present on Kamino.
There's a photo of him. He's crawling on the ground. I think he's looking for his gun, and you can see it on, you know, the side.
That's the first real good shot that you have of that.
That's not a CG Jango.
No, it's only visible. The dent first becomes visible after he gets kicked out of the air when Kenobi like drop kicks him or whatever. That's when you first. Right after that is when you see that dent.
So for those of us that are kind of blind, where is the dent?
It's on the left side of his helmet.
Yeah, it would be where Boba's dent is. It's another quarter of the way back.
Behind that
screen, right? His left.
His left screen, right? Okay.
Yeah,
I can't wait until I get to a job interview after I get my degree and go, "So, what are your skills?" I know that Jango Fett had one blaster in Geonosis.
Yeah, and he had a dent on his helmet.
Keep quiet, man. Just keep quiet. Don't let him know.
I can just totally imagine just like seeing the whoever's interviewing me, the boss, just like raise his hand to his glasses, just like trembling as he takes them off and goes,
"Get out."
Or you're hired.
No, he goes, "You're the first person who's ever revealed that to me. You're hired."
Exactly.
That could happen.
Your best friends.
And so
have to catch the boss who likes Jango Fett, though. So you have to like use your X-ray vision to see if he's got like the Boba Fett tattoo on his back. Like,
it's like what job would I be going for? Chuck E. Cheese's.
Yeah, your interviewer takes off his glasses, looks at you, and says, "Did we just become best friends?"
Exactly. Oh, I'm not even kidding. That's how I got my job at Filmoth this summer. I was talking to the guy, and he asked me, he said, "You're a costumer on your resume?" "Oh, yeah, well, I'm a member of the member of the Mando Mercs in the 501st. No way. And he's like shouting to someone in his office, I'm talking to someone about Star Wars. And then at the end of the interview, it's like, oh yeah, I'm hiring you, by the way. No callbacks, no nothing. It's just, I'm hiring you.
Well, it's always interesting when somebody says to you, so you're into Star Wars, right? yeah, a little
Star
bit.
What?
Yeah, and then you have to explain to your wife that, we do spend our time just digging through these movies, going through them like archaeologists.
The admin user at my current job is named D. Vader.
Well, I just imagine at some point in the future, I would like a really big job. I will mention this somehow, and then it's like, you know what? That's really cool.
And now you're the CEO of, you know, Citibank or whatever, because you knew.
I'm the CEO of Citibank, and I go to comic conventions dressed up.
But he knew. He knew that Jango Fett did not have a jet, or did not have his second blaster on Geonosis. And that's what made Kamino all the difference.
During the Kenobi fight. Most likely. Maybe. Probably.
Probably. Lower. I mean, he might have gotten it. He might have gotten it during the earlier scene.
Actually, I think the dent, now that I'm looking, I see on the rubber bendy suit, he's got a dent on his helmet as well. When he's got
Wait,
the
what?
Flying hook attached to Kenobi.
In the photo you just sent us?
No, not in the photo I just sent us. Different photo.
Well, don't worry about it. He's got it when he's crawling around the tower.
Yeah. Yep. That's the first time you see that. That's the first time you see really accurately see that dent. But you know, like I said, the argument can be there. The problem is that most of that Jango and the scenes of that Jango are CGI'd until that point, and that's the biggest problem. It's just one of those things that when you go into writing, writing a CRL for it, that you have to. You know, we want to be accurate. We only do Mandalorians, and we get called elitist because we are requiring some of these dents and some of these small details that other clubs don't require. And it's difficult to keep everybody happy and be true to the character because we want to be accurate. We want to be the most accurate because this is what we do.
It's almost like it's our bread and butter. And,
it is. If we're gonna do one thing, we're gonna do it right.
Yeah, and this argument really got argument may be the wrong term, but the discussion on this, I remember this getting started. It was probably 5 years ago now. I mean, this one, like with the dent, that one's been hanging out there for a while, and it's
right.
God, I remember talking about this a long time ago, and it was always back and forth. Like, do we require it? Do we not? How big of a deal is it? And it's like, oh, so it's kind of a ball.
I mean, absolutely, you know, and that's one of those things where, you know, we talk about this a lot on the CRL team, and it's like, you know, do we require these things? Should we require these things? And it's one of those things that it's something that we want to require it, but we don't want to. You don't want to push people away. You want to encourage, you know, dual membership in clubs. So you want to have some overlapping CRLs. You don't want to make it so that your CRL overrules someone else's and can hurt membership. So it's those things that we always try, you know, we always are going to be revisiting CRLs when we have accuracy issues, because we want to raise the bar and we do want, you know, kits to continue to be more accurate. And, you know, they're things like that, you know, we constantly struggle with when we're writing these CRLs, because you don't want to push somebody out the door, and but yet you want to stay true and you want to stay accurate. You want someone to look at these costumes and go, that guy picked up the details that I've been seeing for years. This is the only guy I've ever seen it done, and see that he's a merc. You know,
we have come a long way from having the weeks long debate about whether or not people should have knees.
Well, that comes back every couple of years.
I mean, that was like 2009. Like, should people have knees? And then, yeah, everybody has to have knees.
Man, that's reaching way back. That's back. That's from back when people were like arguing about whether or not you had to have gauntlets. Yeah. Like, can I just wrap my hands or do I have to have gauntlets?
Can I just put some bandages on?
See, that's also from back in the day when someone literally coated their hand in Bondo and then asked how to get it off afterwards.
Well, it wasn't me. I coated my hand in Bondo, but I never had to ask how to get it off.
No, it was not you. The guy mixed the entire can of Bondo by hand and then had a hand covered in Bondo, and it hurt.
Oh, my.
What? I would have applied Bondo is now by amazing. Hand sometimes.
That would have been hot.
That would have been hot.
God. Dude, the other thing is that it gets all crunchy, like...
heat deflection.
Yeah, the
heat deflection that much Bondo had intense.
Well, obviously, he didn't stick his hand in the Bondo can and then leave it in the Bondo can. But he mixed it with his hand, and then there was a photo where his hand had Bondo all over it, and I was looking at it going, how did you think that was a good idea?
Oh, man, and the thing is,
I bet you're still listening, where's your Mando? I don't think I ever got a fish.
Ended up completely bald after that too. Because
now he's the Mandalore. Oh,
no.
I just made that up now.
He was the first Merc approved of the robotic arm.
Yes, an actual. Yeah.
You don't recognize me because of my red Bondo arm.
That's right. It turned pink
by Bondo candles.
To be fair, though. That's going to be a thing probably in the next 20 years. We're going to get people with actual robotic arms, and that's going to be cool as hell.
Well, yeah.
I thought we already did. Well, I know we have.
We have, I believe.
Yeah, but they're like the super rich people who ended up funding it themselves. Like that guy in Japan who everyone was saying, he's got a Luke Skywalker hand.
Yeah, so I'm talking about like conventional... everyday prosthesis. We're going to end up with powered prosthesis pretty soon, and that's going to be freaking sweet. Guys, I'm not saying that you should become Samus Mandos, but...
I'm just waiting for a singularity. At one point, when technology becomes so advanced that they're on the same level as us, or when our consciousness gets uploaded into the internet.
Well... Yeah. Realistically speaking, when that happens, we'll all be out of a job anyway, and so we won't be able to afford to make Mandalorian costumes. However,
robot hands.
Robot hands are coming before human simulation and simulated intelligence.
If you could put your brain in a robot body, would you do it?
Forget that. I'm not loading myself to works.
I think
Sean's, you know, great master plan there was just revealed, so it needs to stay.
Realistically speaking, if simulacrum intelligence becomes a thing, you don't have to actually upload your consciousness. You just copy it over onto a server, and then you have your Banhammer alternate identity.
And you have, like, Tron you.
That is pretty much exactly how it's probably going to work, yeah.
And both Star Wars and Tron are owned by Disney, so...
Legit.
You know, that's going to be real good when they put out the next Kingdom Hearts game. Like,
don't
is
cross
Ray
the streets!
That is not a Disney property.
I asked you to make a perfect system. Yeah?
Y'all are hurting my brain. No one responds when you ask for reviews. Ever.
Respond to the reviews.
Respond to your brigade reviews. Send pictures.
I will freely admit I have never responded to a brigade review. Am I still in the brigade? I was an assassin, like, years ago.
Before the dark times. Before the Empire.
Dude.
Well, the thing with the reviews is... we're going to be, if you don't respond, we could deactivate you. And it's not a full reapplication. I mean, that's the other thing about the 2-year reviews. You don't have to fully reapply. We just want you to check in with your brigade marshal and see that you still have that kit. Because especially with some of these cannon kits, we've got retired members who are deactivated. As far as the brigades are concerned, we have some people have sold their kits or they don't, you know, they've modified it to the point where they're no longer an assassin or the urban assault or medic or whatever they were before. And if you're not, that's fine. I mean, this is one of those clubs where, I mean, my experience with the club was I joined and I got through the approval process, and then my Alarad told me, okay, Dave, now you need to go to work. And so I did, and then I kept building, I kept adding things and all that. And I understand that some people outgrow their kits or they stop wearing their brigade kit, and if you have, then we'll move you to an inactive status within the brigades. I would like you to keep in the brigades because, like I said earlier, we're going to have some brigades exclusive merchandise. And I'd really like for as many folks as possible to be able to get that, but some of it will be available to active brigade members only. But other than that, yes, like Dabral says, please respond to the review requests from your brigade marshal so we can keep you on the rolls.
Yeah, and I want to add to that as well. You know, a lot of the times, or a lot of the Canon and the Legends brigade members were auto approved. I mean, last year when I wrote the Canon class and the division and tried to get them all back, some of them didn't even know that they were approved because there was an auto approval process. You know, when the kit passed OM, because there was no BRL for a Canon for this Canon character, they were auto approved, and that was true with. When I became a marshal, I wrote the Return of the Jedi BRL. And I know that I wrote the Empire BRL recently too. And with the addition and the CRL changes to the Django, obviously the Django BRLs are going to reflect that as well. So these lists, they do change. And it's important to keep current with them. And, you know, just because you don't have that new piece that's required or that accurate detail doesn't mean that you're going to be stripped of your brigade status. But we need to know. And, you know, you'll be given ample time to make those changes. But it's important that we do because, you know, if you don't respond, there's really nothing that we can do to help you. If David decides, you go inactive. And we don't want to do that. So I know that the one or the two members that wrote me when I was doing my Canon reviews, just the effort alone to have their kit reviewed took them off the table as far as who I would, you know, put on the chopping block there to lose their status, just because they want to stay current. They're giving the effort, and if I'm willing or if they're willing to give the effort to improve, I'm willing to give them the time to do it. You know, I don't want to push anybody out the door, but, you know, they do change. The BRLs change, the CRLs change, and it's important to stay current.
And to add on to that, I mean, the general focus of the brigades, and this is my focus, and I've talked with the brigade team about this, is the brigades expect a higher level of quality, and in the case of the Canon and Legends kits, a higher level of accuracy than the general CRLs. And the auto approval for the that happened for a couple years of some of the Bobas and the Djangos that came through are fine for general membership, and we're okay with that. But if you think of the brigades as like the level two costuming for our club, we do expect higher levels of quality. We do expect more accuracy. So please, I mean, it's just, if you're at a troop and you have all your stuff there, just take a set of pictures and send it to the brigade marshal. Again, it's not a full reapplication process.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing too, I know when I was writing or when I wrote the Canon division and was asking for reviews, there are certain aspects that are commonly skipped over. And I know that when they were auto approved into brigades, the detail was not looked at. And they're important details, you know, the Wookiee scalps, for instance, are one of those things that are constantly inaccurate on even entry level kits and definitely within brigades. And if you don't know the setup, if you don't know the braids, or if you don't know the Django's, you know, the holster setup and the belt and the small details here and there and how many pouches are here, you know, those are the things that would definitely be overlooked when kits were auto approved. And that's one of the things that I want to really start to look at when I do these reviews is that, you know, I want additional picture. When I review these characters, I want to see the details that make that version of that character unique. You know, if you're going for a Return of the Jedi Boba, I want to see the braids. I want to see those Wookiee scalps as well as the costume. Because there's a world of difference looking at those between the difference between the Jedi braids and the Empire braids. And the same thing goes for Special Edition. It's important to get these details right. You know, if we're gonna be the Mandalorian, the group that you know, defines the Mandalorian costumes, we better have it right.
Fair enough.
Yes, sir.
Alrighty, that is about all we have for this month's edition of Keldabi Talk Radio. Thanks for listening, and on behalf of myself, Thaxos, Frost, Pinocchio, Misha Kitty, Fenrul, this is probably the largest amount of people we've ever had on the podcast at any one given time, and our special guests, Raiden and DeBrawl. Tune in next month.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
This has been a production of the Mandalorian Mercs Costuming Club. To learn more about the topics discussed on this episode, please visit us at www.mandalorianmercs.org. The Mandalorian Mercs is a worldwide Star Wars costuming organization comprised of and operated by Star Wars fans. Star Wars, its characters, costumes, and all associated media are intellectual property of Lucasfilm and Disney. We hope you enjoyed the show and welcome your feedback. Visit our Facebook page or email us at podcast@mandalorianmercs.com.